Most of what makes Amsterdam attractive to travelers today can be attributed to the Dutch society of the 17th century, which we call the Dutch Golden Age. It was an age of artists like Rembrandt and Vermeer. This society transformed a swampy bog into one of the world's most beloved and charming cities. The artists of the Dutch Golden Age painted unapologetically realistic scenes of everyday life in their cities. Many of these scenes portray people in their homes and their towns performing the daily life's unspectacular mundane tasks. The mindset of the painters mirrors that of their architects, builders, and town planners. Amsterdam's urban environment can be characterized by its practicality, its humility, and its honesty. It was more modest relative to other European cities of the time, which were focused on creating monumental architecture to celebrate princes and nobility. Amsterdam lacked the plethora of palaces, cathedrals, or grand processions of prelates, politicians, and sovereigns, and instead they focused on creating a comfortable, practical, and humble city for the everyday citizen and merchant. They made a city for the practicalities and realities of their lives, stripped free from pageantry and pomp. In this unashamed authenticity, beauty would eventually emerge. The canal system is at the heart of Amsterdam. It's the city's lifeblood, organizing and giving life to it. Our examination of Amsterdam begins with the settlement's early history and the establishment of the early Dutch canals. We can trace early settlement in the Amsterdam region to about 1100 AD. In addition to a healthy supply of fish, the early settlers found the area appealing because of its rich soil, which they used for farming. The location was inhospitable, and its natural geographic features, mainly its elevation in relationship to sea level, discouraged any permanent settlement. The constantly changing shoreline and regular flooding prompted the early farmers to attempt to manipulate the earth through dikes and dams along the edge of the marshy wilderness to protect their farms from being flooded. Much of the region had rich soil comprised of nutrient-dense peat or decayed plant material. To avoid water intrusion, the people began cutting channels into the peat bogs and then channeling that water away from their farms and their homes, while they continued to build up mounds of lands to increase the buildable earth. Faced with the constant threat of water, the local people joined together and established a culture of hard work and cooperation to defend their city from the water intrusion. The Dutch's ability and mastery of controlling water through manipulating the landscape were key ingredients dictating their city's eventual shape. Amsterdam was raised on earthen mounds above the water level by the residents there. They mastered techniques. They reclaimed large amounts of marshy land to build upon. They established complex communal organizations to organize this building activity. The Water Catchment Board, an agency that still exists today, was created in the 13th century to manage these tasks. The resilience and community spirit deeply ingrained in the city's history continues to shape its development today, serving as an inspiration and a testament to the power of unity in overcoming natural challenges. The first diking and damming began with the Amstel River, when the settlement was still a small village. Just after the year 1200, the farmers constructed a large dam about 50 miles upstream where the Amstel River flowed into the North Sea to control the region's flooding. Today, the original dam is the landmark that establishes the city's center, and it's how the city's name evolved. There were many advantages to trading in Amsterdam. The city was along a trade route protected from the storms and the piracy of the open seas. There was a culture of reliable, prompt payment and many different opportunities for profit investment. The town had plentiful and reliable storage facilities, and the money circulating in the city was managed diligently and precisely. This created a general appeal for trading and investing in their local companies. Amsterdam experienced a period of steady development towards the end of the medieval era, just as capitalism began to become the town's spirit. There was a significant population growth, and people were coming to the city to do business. The thriving markets yielded massive profits and prosperity, which allowed private development to occur. The population roughly quadrupled between 1567 and 1630. During this time, older medieval principles, values, and institutions mingled with the early capitalistic ideas, creating a unique and intriguing residential urban plan for the city. there was a noticeable shift in the culture as well. Values associated with honor and heroism were ubiquitous in medieval society. Dying in war for conquest was one of the highest virtues that one could achieve in their lifetime. People began to depart from these ideas, gravitating more towards principles of independence, individualism, freedom, and the pursuit of personal wealth. The merchant became the new hero, replacing the medieval knight. By establishing trade, mutually beneficial relationships, and cultural intermingling, the merchant helped to limit the possibilities of war. During this transition, the city center maintained much of its integrity and unity. It resisted the pressure to overhaul itself with the new town planning ideas that were taking over the rest of Europe. It held on to its humanistic scale, grounded in the medieval era. The medieval quarter was, yes, redeveloped, but the city as a whole did not deteriorate. While the city center maintained much of its original cohesion, the city needed to expand outwards into the surrounding marshy wetlands to accommodate the growth. Many of the merchants doing business in the town were accumulating large amounts of financial resources and wanted to build on the outskirts of the city center. The local city agencies and municipalities needed to create a plan that would accommodate this influx of people into the city. Their surveyor and architect, Daniel Stolpart, is often credited for carrying out the plan of the three canals. He was part of a larger team that created the vision for the three primary canals surrounding the city center, organized in a spiderweb plan with kinks that changed direction to form the semicircular pattern around the old city. Today, this plan is still intact. To build on the marshy outskirts, many of its buildings had to be constructed on piles driven into the ground to strengthen the earth and form a stable base. Thousands of people were involved in creating the canals, moving earth, digging, building drainage, laying streets, and driving those big piles into the wet soil. It would have been a regular sight and a normal part of everyday life in 17th century Amsterdam. Due to the difficulty, pace, and cost of this type of construction, the city's expansion was done with great care and intention to avoid wasting the valuable resources. Development was not allowed to occur haphazardly at the will of any property owner. In other cities of the time, one wouldn't need to put much thought into the location of a new building. They would simply begin construction on the nearest stable soil, often resulting in a disjointed, chaotic city arrangement, lacking any trace of organization or cohesive identity. The expansion plan required the local municipalities to approve the piling foundations before building could occur. The agencies planned the streets and the footpaths in front of each house. However, they were required to be paid for by the private property owner. This approach resulted in a systematic expansion of the land section by section. With each section that opened, the municipality ran utilities and their services. Here, the public and the private enterprises complemented each other beautifully. The reciprocal and cyclical application of continual planning and building kept the city's layout from chaos. The plan of the three canals has a harmonious blend of spaciousness, good scale, use of trees, preservation of water, and intelligible order. The success of Amsterdam's planning and development is due to a blend of municipal and corporate oversight in the city's planning and layout, as well as the supervising of its creation and maintenance with a view to the public good. This was one of the gifts left over from the medieval economy and culture. Responsible, well-intentioned public direction guided the individual development fueled by a thriving economy. The type of structure that would line the canals and still does today is called the Dutch row house, and it's a Dutch invention. The row home exuded the characteristics and functionality of individualism, self-sufficiency, and practicality. Each home had frontage along the canals that allowed their own vessels to dispatch and deliver goods that the merchants traded for at sea. The homes were used as warehouses to store the goods and also had functioning individual small gardens at their rear. The building facades had an average of roughly 26 feet of frontage along the canal, typically enough space for about three windows that allowed a decent amount of light into each dwelling unit. At the rear of each property was a planned garden that was dedicated to the private home and varied between about 25 to 80 feet in depth. This was plenty of room for gardening and enjoying the outdoors. This layout gave a subtle nod to its medieval roots. From a humanistic perspective, this design ticked many boxes. The density and scale of the row home layout is well-suited for a walkable, pedestrian-friendly town. Architectural variations in the building facade distinguished the houses and gave variety to the cityscape, while also maintaining somewhat of an orderly, organized look. The canals in Amsterdam served multiple very practical purposes. They served as a circulation and transport system, giving individuals direct access to the world via their canal house. The homes were often their offices and warehouses, where the goods could be stored and sold. This revolutionary concept empowered the individual and opened the world to them. It gave the merchants an incredible amount of autonomy, freedom, and access to the outside world. They allowed goods to be transported all over the country quicker, safer, and cheaper than land travel. Historically, the canal system was also used for drainage and sewer disposal. Many cities at the time were infested with garbage, waste, and human and animal discharge, which led to sanitation issues, disease, and putrid smells all over the city. In Amsterdam, the canal system naturally discharged the waste, making the city cleaner and healthier than other cities at the time. The canal system also served as a vibrant public space. Generous tree-lined pedestrian pathways ran alongside the canals, still do today, and they prompt interaction, business trade, and community bonding. It was the space where business deals were conducted and where kids could play. The canals were also naturally beautiful in the city. Humans have always been attracted to water. The water flowing in the canals was relaxing and peaceful for the citizens. It was somewhere that they could connect and admire the natural beauty. In Charles Duff's book, The North Atlantic Cities, he identifies trust as one of the key characteristics that led to the prosperity of the Dutch city in the Golden Age. He states that trust turned out to be good business. The black-suited burghers of the Golden Age made huge amounts of money from their willingness to collaborate and trust each other. No business requires trust and teamwork as much as seafaring, and the Dutch were first and foremost a nation of seafarers. The general trustworthy value structure deeply embedded into Dutch society supports the understanding of why and how these people were able to construct the canals, create the first joint stock corporations, and live together in harmony and tolerance. They made a culture of people who were generally straightforward and trustworthy. The culture exuded humility about the individual's place and importance within a larger group of people, while simultaneously allowing freedom and control for one's own destiny. One can't help but see the similarities between Amsterdam and Venice. The early Venetians shared the same threat of constant water intrusion into their city. Similar to the people of Amsterdam, they were forced to make their land hospitable by manipulating and building up the land, thus establishing a culture of strong community collaboration and unity. In both cities, the result was a unique urban environment and a thriving city with a unified purpose. This is why Amsterdam is often called the Venice of the North. When we look at Amsterdam, we have to ask ourselves, are there principles or features exhibited in the city that could be implemented in future cities? Something is clearly working here, and it attracts millions of visitors each year coming to walk along the canals and experience its vibrant culture, urban design, and architecture. The presence of water in the canals, comfortable scale, balance of organization and variation, and inviting public spaces amalgamate to contribute to its allure. When we contrast Amsterdam with the cities that we're creating today, we're prompted to question the values, principles, and the ideas underneath the motives driving our modern cities. The stark difference is intriguing, generating curiosity about the mindset and motives of each culture. My journey is a search to uncover the mindset and the value system behind cities all over the world as a means to build better environments for our future. Thanks so much. If you like this, check out rostarchitects.com, where you can read more about the history of Amsterdam. You can also look at our YouTube channel or our podcast for additional episodes. Thanks so much.